Anything combat with Johnny K.
But it's anything combat, though.
Welcome back, combatants, to the Anything Combat Show. I'm your host, Johnny K. Today, we've got Rat Garbage on the show, pro MMA fighter who's just got a UFC contract on Dana White Contender Series. Please welcome to the show, Mandel Nalo. How are you, Mandel?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Tell me, a lot of the UFC contracts that I've seen, a lot of young guys go on the show and it's not prevalent to see older people past 33 get a contract. And I believe your contract was the oldest signing that they've ever had into the UFC. Is that correct?
That's what I heard, but I don't know. I cannot confirm.
I read that your signing was the oldest one that they've ever done for the Dana White Contender Series. And I want to ask you, seeing that it's so rare, it must mean that they've seen a talent in you that they haven't with some other person and that you're worth it. So let me know, what do you think about that, seeing that you went on the show with, you know, there's all these young, hungry guys there and you walked away with the contract?
Yeah, I think it was a couple things. Like, it's how I fought, for sure. Like, the fight went really well, and I did a lot of cool stuff in a short amount of time. And then the quality of my opponent was pretty high as well. Like, that guy's Cage Warriors champion at lightweight, so that's not, like, a easy thing to get a hold of either. And then I think, like, my reputation on the scene is also pretty good. Like, anybody who's trained with me or has spoken about me wouldn't really have much bad to say. So I think it was a couple things. But probably, honestly, having been on Contender, feels a lot like if Dana White's having a good day and he's enjoying what he sees, then your chances go way up.
Mandel, do you consider yourself a fighter?
Yeah.
See, I went on all your socials and I saw all your art and stuff, and I saw a whole bunch of different things about your personality that I didn't know whether or not you considered fighting as your main thing.
Yeah, it's always been my main thing. I just know, like, because it consumes so much of my life, like all the other stuff that I do that maybe people see because they can't have a camera in the gym 24/7. That's what people will see more of. But my day-to-day, you know, regular life is mostly about fighting. And then the stuff that I, you know, show people is the other stuff I do.
With the Contender Series, did you feel like you got to express your game? Or do you feel like, even though you got the finish, that maybe you underperformed to your standard?
No, I thought that was a pretty good kind of snapshot into what I like to do in fights. Like, the way I like to look at most matchups is, like, you start out with a template and then you kind of branch off from there. And that was, like, just the beginning of my game. And then if we had kind of progressed further into, you know, deeper technique, then I would have got to show more. But that was, like, a good sort of trailer for what the rest of my game looks like.
Tell me about that template. How do you approach that for each opponent?
I think when you first see whoever you're fighting, you got to identify what tools they're good at and what tools that you have in your game you can use to exploit their weaknesses. And then you need to understand how they're going to address those tools within the fight. And, like, then you keep going deeper and deeper through that. Like, let's say I used the leg kick on this guy. So if he switches stances, what's the next thing you got to do? Well, then you got to keep him in the belly, or you got to throw right hand. Like, you just have to think about it that way. And then if he's, you know, defending the teep to the belly or catching it, then you have to think, oh, maybe I'll shoot outside, head outside single or spin double or something. Like, you just have to keep problem solving and going down the line and be prepared for his answers, because everybody at this level is pretty good. So you have to assume they won't just hope you stop doing something that's working.
I've seen, you know, when I was looking at your Tapology, that you've got a 100% finish rate because of that style. So, and also split between subs and KOs as well. So let me know a little bit about that approach. Why do you feel like you've been so effective with that 100% finish rate compared to other fighters?
Yeah, I think a lot of it just has to do with being in the cage. Generally speaking, I'm like pretty like I do stuff that is meaner than a guy would normally do in the cage. You know, like when a guy might just like think about, oh, I gotta land this leg kick with clean technique. Like I just want to boot through the guy's leg so hard that it snaps in half. You know, like I just have like a this weird mindset where I'm like, maximum damage at any point. I want the guy to feel like he's grabbing a hold of a ball of spikes, you know, like nothing he touches isn't painful. And that's the way I think about it when I'm in the cage. You know, my normal life, I'm a regular ass guy. I don't really think that way.
When you're training, how do you drill that without going full impact?
Yeah, that's kind of the fun of it. Like, if you're creative, you can think of way cooler ways to do damage in positions that are standard across the board. Like, things that stuck out to me when I was a kid, Anderson Silva, when he fought Chael Sonnen, I think, and Chael was leaning up against the cage, and Anderson just kneed him right in the sternum, which is a move I hadn't seen before until that point. Was like, oh yeah, like why wouldn't you do things like this that nobody really thinks of, but they would hurt so bad, you know? Like low leg kick is another tool that, you know, people only recently have really started to understand how much damage you can do with that. Teeps to the face when Anderson did that to Vitor. It was like, what the heck? You can do that? And just like allowing yourself to be creative in your touch sparring or in your MMA roles, you can be like, oh, I can elbow from here. Oh, I could do this thing to do damage. Maybe it's like kneeing the guy's shoulder when he's in turtle after failing a double. Or, you know, now that 12 to 6 elbows are a thing, there's so many ways you can do damage in 12 to 6. So it's like, all it is using your creativity to find those opportunities and not actually like hammering into the guy, you know?
Mundell, who do you think were the main influences on your MMA game? Which fighters did you look at and you were a fan of in the past?
Yeah, I think Anderson is number one coming up, just because he's kind of the gold standard for doing maximum damage while also being elusive. But I think understanding that being well-rounded, like with Anderson, it was always like if he gets taken down, it's going to be a rough fight for him. So understanding that and seeing George and kind of growing up around his career, was the other side of it, where it's like I want to be like Anderson and be creative and be a like damaging in that way, while also understanding that if you have George's well-roundedness, you can do that from anywhere, not just on the feet, not just at range.
Have you gotten to work with GSP at all at your time with Firas?
Yeah, Georgia. I started my career. I was one of George's training partners. He's had many, obviously, but I got to be with him more closely when he was preparing for Dan Hardy. And then since then, I was around him, you know, for every fight after that. And he's still in the gym, you know, currently.
Do you still get to work with him? Because I know that he's been going down to H2O, I believe.
Yeah, he still comes to TriStar. We don't work together all that much. Actually, maybe the beginning of my last camp, he started doing a couple striking classes just for fun. I think he actually came back and sparred. So yeah, he's still here a little bit, but we don't work together. We're on different trajectories, you know. He's living his life as the best of all time, and I'm still trying to stamp my name in the sport, you know.
When did you start in MMA? Was TriStar your first gym, or were you at somewhere else beforehand?
Yeah, I was at a small place in Ottawa, which is 2 hours from Montreal. And I just got good enough there that I realized I needed somewhere else to train. And back in the day, TriStar used to host 3 p.m. Saturday sparring, invite only. And so I got the invite to come test it out. And then that was probably, you know, 3 years into my training, you know, in martial arts seriously. And then I just kept coming up for that Saturday until they opened the dorms, and then I started living there.
And what was that like for you, living at the gym?
The best. Like, the, I don't think there are a lot of MMA guys that get that kind of college or university experience, but, like, it was just a group of us that loved MMA and knew that this was the only place in Canada to get as good as we wanted, and we all just lived in this, you know, rough apartment beside the gym, not even a 1 minute walk from the gym, in the same building. And we would all just like watch fights and train every day. It was the best. And like, Eamon lived with me then, and now he's, you know, top 10 in the UFC. My friend Louis Sanudakis is an amazing fighter. He lived with us. We had so many guys come through. Kenny Florian was there. There's too many names to even go through, but yeah, it was a really cool time.
What can you tell me about your relation with Faraz? How much has that influenced your fighting game as well as you as a person?
Yeah, Faraz is he's a big brother. You know, it's pretty cool to have him by my side through essentially every pro fight I've had. Seeing him, you know, learn and grow as a coach is amazing as well. Like, I remember him, like, his kids have trained at the gym forever, and I remember his kids being little babies, you know, not even able to be on the mat, and now they're tough, you know, tough young men that are able to roll with the adults in the class. Like, it's just been so amazing to experience our careers together, and like all the guys that came up with us, and just to still love it and to still be committed to getting better at it.
What's that dynamic like? Because you're very easygoing. Is for us hard on you, and it kind of like levels out?
Yeah, like Faraz takes MMA very seriously, and I do too, but like, I oftentimes try to joke around way too much in the gym. I'm kind of a goofball. And I remember when I was pretty young, Faraz told me, he's like, you got to take this stuff more seriously. You got to stop joking around. And I think we've kind of evened each other out. He understands that I'm always, like, that's the way I enjoy my training to be, is a little goofier. But I can be serious when it matters. And I do understand where he's coming from. Like, to a certain degree, it is life or death. Like, obviously, that would be a horrible thing to happen. But you saw, did you see the contender on Tuesday? Those guys brutalized each other.
They had like 500 strikes each or something.
Yeah, they both ended up in the hospital. Like, who knows what the recovery from that is. So, like, goofing around and, like, not taking it serious can have some terrible repercussions. So, as long as we take the training seriously while also having a good time, that's all that really matters. So yeah, we figured out a happy medium for sure.
You said that you were dissatisfied at competing one time per year, and that you planned to fight four times in 2021. That didn't happen. So run me through that year. You weren't able to have your matches, and now that you're at the UFC and you're going to get your opportunity to debut, how's that going to change for you?
Yeah, well, the big thing about being in the UFC is they put on a million shows a year. So, like, you have the opportunity to hop on a short notice show and also prepare for these fights, you know, 2 months down the line. So, like, it's much easier to get those opportunities. Whereas with other organizations, if they put on six shows a year and you're, let's say you're having a baby, so you can't fight for whatever that 2 months is, and then you blow your knee, or not even blow your knee, but you get an injury, you get a cut, And that's another, 3 weeks that you might not be able to fight. And like all of a sudden, those six opportunities to fight turn into three. And then if they don't offer you anything, then that's a whole year you spent not fighting. So like in the UFC, you have the opportunity to do it. And we've seen guys do it over and over. Where like once they get into the UFC, especially guys who are a little bit deeper into their career, they just pick up fights. Like Kevin Holland's a guy who I respect a lot. He's just like willing to do whatever at any weight, which is even more impressive. But yeah, it's just the fact that the UFC has so many shows. It's like a million opportunities to try to do it.
Do you think that the fact that you've had this 100% finish rate, that you haven't seen like a long fight with like a decision victory, that because of that, it plays into your strengths because people haven't seen your grappling game, they don't have enough tape on you because you keep on finishing people? Does that play into your game going into the UFC?
I think probably, like, I think a lot of people will be looking at me and thinking, as long as I get this guy to round three, that's where I can get him. Or, this guy is only a striker, he's only dangerous on the feet or whatever. Like, guys will make a lot of assumptions about me that can play in my benefit for sure. It's also like, it's not like I've been preparing for first round knockouts. I'd be a crazy person to be like every fight I take, just be like, oh yeah, I'm gonna knock this guy out. I'll prepare for that. Like all my camps, ones that have been for a title, ones that have been for 3 round fights, like I'm doing all the work that's necessary. Every fight I go into, me and Fraz were like, it's going 15 or it's going 25. Like we're gonna win the decision, and then good stuff just happens. So it's not like I've been planning on getting all these finishes. It's just the way I fight.
How hard was it for you to stick with the sport if you weren't seeing kind of the monetary benefit that you would want to see?
Yeah, that's the real test, and I've seen so many guys not see it through because it really does, it hurts to, especially if you have friends that aren't in the sport and they're able to go on vacation or go out to nice restaurants. Your friend, you get a girlfriend and you got to tell her like, sorry, you're paying for dinner because I do this sport that doesn't pay me anything. And it's not like other sports where a professional MMA fighter is not a professional basketball player or a professional football player. Like we're still very much like needing to have a second job to cover our bills or whatever it is. So that separates the guys who really love it and the guys who are just in it for the fun of it or the fame or whatever it is. That being said, I do think some guys just they can't end up doing it. Like if you have a young family, you might just have to not fight. You could be the potentially greatest fighter of all time, but like it's a really not a sport for a guy with serious financial burden on him. Like you need to change your life to support this dream that we all have. So it's been hard, but also like I never was a guy who wanted to drive a sick car or like that's even now it's not even why I'm doing it. Like you could ask me, do you want to be the best of all time or be a billionaire? I'd say I want to be the best of all time. Like it's very secondary in my head, the financial aspect of fighting. So like it's been easy for me, but I see guys struggle with it.
What do you think for you was the biggest struggle with this MMA path that you've chosen?
I think the uncertainty, like once I was no longer with Bellator, it's no guarantee that you get signed to another major. Like then the scene is not that healthy right now for a guy in my position that's like had some good success but not as much as he wants, and he's getting older, and a lot of guys don't want to take a chance on you, or they don't want to pay you what you're worth to fight their champion, or they don't want their local guy to lose to a guy with more experience. And so like you don't know when your next matchup is going to be, who it's going to be against, where, how much you're getting paid, and whether that will culminate in a shot in the bigger show. Like before I got the call for Contender, it was just week to week, like calling my manager, hey, what's the news? Do you think I'll get on this show? Where's an opportunity? Do you think I could fight this guy? Like, what's the game plan? And that's the hardest thing, is not even knowing what the next month is going to be like. I've had times where I'm on vacation with my family and bang, I get a call, hey, there's an opportunity to fight in Mexico last minute. I was like, all right, I guess I'm cutting it to 55. We're cutting the vacation short, and I'm flying to Mexico in a couple weeks. That's the hardest thing to me.
When do you think that MMA will get the acknowledgement that it should for its professionalism, seeing that MMA is such a difficult sport and there are so many intricacies to it, and you have to be so good at multiple facets, multiple sports all put into one? There's a lot of work that goes into it. I've seen guys stay in the gym for 6 hours every day per week, yet it's not given the same level of professionalism as another sport. When do you think that stigma will change?
Think it's really hard. I think it'll have to be like all the individual pieces being recognized. Like people need to understand what it means to be a jiu-jitsu, like a high-level jiu-jitsu player. Like I guess wrestling, the work's kind of already done. It is a very respected sport, but like people need to understand that MMA is just slamming those things together and trying to bridge the gaps between like wrestling and boxing and wrestling and jiu-jitsu, and understanding like it's all of it. Like you need to be a good boxer, a good enough boxer when you're doing MMA. But I think that's like, it's so far down the line. I don't know. It's such a niche sport. It is nasty. Like, so I watch some fights and I'm like, oh my goodness, I can't believe I do this. So it's like a tough sell for people. I doubt it ever gets the true recognition it requires, truly. 'Cause it's not just about getting good, it's also about being tough enough to do it, you know? It's like it's crazy.
When you train your martial arts, does For Us like to separate all the martial arts into different training sessions and then put them together in a singular training session? And via percentage, how much time are you working individually on each martial art compared to holistically altogether?
Yeah, so at TriStar we have like all of the striking and jiu-jitsu classes that are separate. There's still a heavy MMA slant to the kickboxing. So he's not teaching like regular K1 style kickboxing drills. It's still with an MMA skewed towards MMA, like small gloves and our rule set, you know, with wrestling as a consideration. Same thing with jiu-jitsu. Like he will oftentimes, because our jiu-jitsu program is really high level, we have a lot of really good jiu-jitsu players. But he'll oftentimes teach separate techniques for the MMA guys and the jiu-jitsu, the pure jiu-jitsu players. So like we try to integrate it all on the fly rather than have to, you know, think like, how would this technique work in an MMA setting? Like we're always thinking of that.
How excited are you to get into the UFC and to actually show what you have?
Yeah, like to me, that's a one big milestone. Like obviously getting in is cool and all, but like we've seen guys go 0-3 and then get booted and it is what it is. So getting the win is really important. That means you're truly UFC level. Like getting there in the eyes of the spectator. Like I know I'm UFC level. I think I'm way better than UFC level. But I need to prove it. And if you mess up on the day, you're only as good as those 15 minutes or whatever. So, it would be really nice to achieve that goal. And then just to show, like, if you can do well in your UFC debut against the right opponent, like the springboard effect of being on Contender and doing something good and then doing it again in the big show is huge. We've seen it happen with you know, all the fighting nerds essentially did that in the past 2 years, where like they were nobodies and then they did well in their debut, and then all of a sudden they're like, you know, opening up the main event, the main card in Madison Square Garden or something. Like they will recognize your talent if you're able to do it again and like continue to do it. So I think the better you do in your debut, like the more they recognize that we can really push this guy forward quickly. And it benefits them. Like I'm on a smaller contract. So like the bigger fights I get now is just cheap for them. So it's better for everybody. Except me, I guess.
I personally think that you'll do well in the UFC just from your style, from how you match up with everybody else. What's interesting is that you also fought in Bellator 8 times, right? And what we've seen from the Bellator guys, like your Pico and your Patchy Mix, they have gotten in there and they haven't really done as well as we would have hoped the Bellator guys to do. Now, personally, I don't group you with the Bellator guys because I think you're just a fighter. I think you're a fighter with a skill set. I don't really see you as a Bellator guy. Also, can you just tell me, what do you think about that? Why did that happen?
Like, I think one thing that happened, so I'll speak to both guys because those guys are the big ones that like didn't really do what they were supposed to. And the one thing that is similar with both of them is when the merger happened with PFL and Bellator, these guys probably got a good contract to stay with that show. And I don't know what it was worth. I don't know what the payment was like, but they were expecting to get paid the money that was in their contract to fight, you know, to defend their belts or to move up in the game. And they had to sit for 2.5, 3 years before they just got fed up and they decided, okay, I need to do something else. I'm going to sign to the UFC. So, like, that is a huge amount of time in an MMA fighter's career to not fight. The other thing that happened to both guys is that they were being gassed up this whole time by everybody, their gym mates, their teammates. You're the best in the world, Patchy. Look at you. You just beat all these guys in Bellator, you know? And for 3 years, he probably was that good. I watched Patchy Mix. He's the man. He's what, how, who did he beat with that knee? It was crazy.
Roughly on screen.
Yeah, Stotts, who's like another killer. So like he's living with that in his mind, but that happened 3 years ago. And then to now come in with all this hype, and have to fight a guy who's been doing it actively for the past 3 years. He's been building. So he's building and you've been stagnant. And maybe you got injured, you know, in those 3 years as well. So like all this hype, plus I've seen it. Look at every single guy. I don't care who he is. Khabib's first fight in the UFC. More recently, what's his name?
Liam Edwards as well.
Yeah, Leon Edwards first fight in the UFC. Who's another guy that the who's fighting next week in Vancouver, the main event? The Ritter. His first fight in the UFC, everybody was joking, oh, he got dropped by Mercer. This guy's gonna get stomped out. And now look how good he looks. Your first fight in the UFC is hard. It's like it plays in your head. It is a bigger show than you're used to. So like that happened to Patchy Mix. He's got to fight Mario Bautista, who's a killer, probably top five in the division. And he's hasn't fought in 3 years. It's his first fight in the UFC. And there's all this hype, like, oh, I'm supposed to be the champion already. Like, I can see why it happened to him. It's not like he's not skilled. You know, like nobody thinks about that these Bellator guys, these PFL guys, had to sit for 3 years, you know, while training, not understanding that, like, who knows what their life is like. We've seen like a small piece of your life starts to, you know, crumble and your whole career blows apart, you know, like a divorce happens, the guy's career is gone. A coach moves states and no, he's no longer on your team. All of a sudden, you don't have the dynamic of the team that you used to. The team falls apart. So, like, who knows what happened in those 3 years to these guys who are great, but they just like you're they're expected to show it on the day in the big show against guys who are also really good. And then Aaron Pico, it's just the story of his career. I remember his pro debut was opening up the main card in Madison Square Garden against a guy with like 30 fights. Like, what do you want from the guy, you know? So I don't know. I don't really put much stock into the Bellator narrative. Like, once you actually think about it, it makes sense to me. How are they supposed to do well?
Tell me about the Mota fight. How was your foot? Because I watched that and I saw your foot go numb. Can you tell me what that experience was like for you?
Yeah, to me that was so that was my first loss. I had my first son the month before that fight. So like my wife had the baby on like a Sunday or something. I left the Monday to come train at TriStar and left them both in Toronto, and I was just gone for the month. So I was like over it. I was like, I just want to be at home. And then the fight was going fine. I knew we were 1-1. And I was just like, okay, I'm just gonna beat him the way I beat him in the first round, and it should be fine. Like he's shown he doesn't really want to actually fight me. He just wants to avoid the fight and try to squeak out a 10-9 in the third. And he wasn't like he kicked my leg maybe twice in the fight, you know, and it was above the knee, like on the thigh. I was like, the pressure I'm getting from him just wanting to score leg kicks is like fine. And then sometimes I do this thing against leg kicks where I pull my foot up, like I pull my knee across my body to try to like take some of the steam off the kick rather than check it. And so I turned my knee inside and it kind of like his toes caught the pocket of the back of my knee and it hit the nerve. And then I started to roll my ankle. I was like, oh fuck. What do I do if I switch or I start backing up, then he's going to think he actually did something. So I just kept like stupidly being like, I got to keep pressuring. And then I kept tripping. I kept rolling my ankle. I must have rolled my ankle like 9 times. And then I remember he threw a like another left kick and I went to cross block it. And I, in my head, when I went to cross block it, I was like, if I put my foot down, it's coming from so high up that if I roll it, I'm just going to blow my ankle up. So I just fell to my back and then it got stopped. And like my corners, the ref, they all thought my knee was gone, but it was just my ankle. And then I'm so stubborn that that night in the casino, I just walked around all night, like acting like I wasn't actually hurt. It was just my fucking, you know, it was the nerve. Like, what do you want from me? And then like my ankle was like a damn watermelon by the end of the night because I just walked on it all night. No ice, no bandage, nothing. I was like, didn't hurt me at all. But it was good, you know. It definitely showed me some. Like it was a good lesson to learn at that moment.
How important is your art for you?
Yeah, I think it's like all art is important to me. Like there are things don't need to just be utilitarian. Like things should be beautiful in life. And that's like obviously very subjective, but like trying to make things that are aesthetically pleasing to some part of you as a person is a and trying to create beautiful things is a is an important you know, part of the human experience generally.
What got you into art?
I think just appreciating it generally. Like once you've seen something like and martial arts too is like, you know, it's an expression in a way, and like watching people do it well, it does evoke something in you if you have an eye for that sort of thing. So like just listening to music or watching movies that have an artistic you know, reverence to them, I think it all just kind of feeds into itself. And then like you, if you're creative at all, you just go like, I should be using my, I should be doing something as well.
Do you feel like you can express yourself from an artistic point of view, different in MMA than to your art, or do you kind of see them as similar?
You know, I haven't really thought about it much, but I would say they're probably more similar than you would think. Like it's all just because it's never like me thinking I need to get this idea out. Let me put it into art form. Like it's more just this is how I'm feeling right now. Let's just see what I can do. Like it's more like when I'm making something, it's always somewhat urgent. Like, I'm trying to do it for the sake of doing it, not just because I have this thing I need to get out of myself. Same thing with MMA. Like, if I have a problem to solve, I'm thinking of it more like in the moment. It's more free form than like, I need to get good at this technique because this is objectively the correct thing to do. Like, it's more just like in the moment, this is how I'm feeling.
So that influences your art, but tell me a little bit more about the process. How do you set everything up? Like, how do you approach it? Do you use one type of paint or something compared to another?
I am like totally scatterbrained. I'm not like an artist really. So like I'll use Photoshop a lot. I'll use paint sometimes. I'll, you know, arrange objects I find, like anything I can do to just do essentially what I'm thinking of. And then I'll, like, if it's good, I'll put it out. If not, it's just, I did that and that's fine. Like, I'll use markers that a kid would use, you know, like I'll just try to like, oh, this is something that I wanted to try. But there's no like, you know, planned out approach. It's not well thought out enough.
So your art pieces are basically what you're feeling at that given moment, and then you try and express it in any way that you can possibly get to that conclusion.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, if I knew how to play music, I would definitely do something like that. Or like, you know, it's with the skill, the small amount of skills that I have, I try to do something.
What's the biggest difference between your art as well as your MMA career?
I think I'm actually good at MMA. the art stuff is just stuff that I'm slapping together with, you know, whatever I have. But like, I have all the tools in MMA to be good.
Do you get a sense of meaning from martial arts?
Yeah, no, for sure. It's like another big part of being a good person, or like a complete person, is pursuing something, like pursuing greatness in a way, like, or perfection in your craft or whatever. And that's what martial arts is to me, like trying to be better every day, like that incremental you know, increase in skill is what martial arts is. For sure. It's not just like getting good, winning a belt, being a millionaire. Like, it's just about that personal toil of like getting to a little bit better every day.
What can you tell me about resilience for all the people that are listening to this pod right now? How do they unlock resilience in the sport of MMA?
I think having perspective, true perspective, will make you more resilient. Like, that doesn't mean set your sights low. It just means like, understand that a lot of the correct steps might be way more incremental than getting into the UFC, becoming a UFC champion, you know, having a nice car or whatever people want to do. And then I think that, like, as with everything, if you are committed to the task, so like committed to martial arts and not the end goal, then something good will happen, whether that is what you assumed or what you had hoped the end goal would be, or something that happens completely randomly. You know, you have the most successful gym in your city, or, you know, you are recognized in some capacity for your martial arts skill. It doesn't always have to be the thing you set out to do, but if you continue to do the work, something good will happen. And that's always what I've thought. Like, I never was worried like, oh, my dream will never come true, because my dream is to train martial arts. So whatever good stuff happens to me from that task is the reason I'm doing it.
How'd you get affiliated with Sam Hyde?
I'm a crazy, like, I'm a fan guy. Like, if somebody's doing something special that I appreciated, I will message them and I will tell them about that. And those guys, the MD guys, are cool enough to, you know, respond. So I fought in Connecticut for Bellator one time, and this is when the MDE guys their show had been canceled. And I knew that Nick had an antique shop close to where I had fought. So I was like, me and my wife like to go antiquing and stuff. So we were like, oh, let's go to Nick's shop. And then Nick was the man, and we met up in Providence that night and, like, you know, caught up and chatted and hung out. And I've been boys with those guys ever since. They're like, they're the best.
My final question for you is, what's the best video game that you've ever played?
Best? Hard to say. Like, the games that have left an impact on me, I would say Tekken 3 is big. What's another big one? World of Warcraft. Vanilla and Burning Crusade era World of Warcraft, like, unstoppable in terms of fun for a guy who's not doing anything. But yeah, I would say those two probably the most.
So we know, what hero did you choose in World of Warcraft?
Oh, man, embarrassing. Maybe not, whatever. I was an undead mage. I like long-range weapons.
That's all we have time for, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Mendel, for your time. Is there any final remarks you want to say to fans at home as we wrap up the podcast today?
No, keep doing whatever you love to do, and go to rackgarbage.ca, buy a shirt. I'm trying my hardest at the shirts too. I don't skimp. I think I lost money on the last drop because I tried to make them as good as I could. So I appreciate anybody who goes there.
Follow Mundell Nallo on Instagram, link in the description. Go to his website. We'll put that in the description as well. Follow Anything Combat. We will see you all next time.
Become a combatant.